above the horizontal.
Pushes away from McCulloch. Thurston gets the ball to Morgan. Morgan crosses the 20. Comes away to O'Neill. Gets the ball. And Felder scored. Felder scored in the corner.
Welcome to Above the Horizontal, a podcast about the NRL. I'm your host, Bo Nicholson. On this episode, we will be discussing our players of the week, the weekly hot take, which this week is which unlikely selection we'd most like to see for State of Origin Game 1. We'll then be talking about if the Sharks on top of the ladder are legit, the real deal. Is Wayne Bennett going back to the future and moving back to Souths the right move for him or and for Souths? We're going to talk about the refereeing blunders because there were some atrocious examples of refereeing over the weekend of round 9. Before we hear from the Big E with his phenomenal tips of the week, we'll be covering our match of the round for round 10, giving our tips and our bold predictions. To help me do that, we'll be joined by the Big E, Owen Gibson, a bit later on. But in the meantime, I have two other panelists. Kieran Gibson's here. Hello, Gibbo. Who was your player of the week for round 9?
Hey mate, I wasn't sure how to split it, so I've actually gone for the two Raider halves, Ethan Strange and KO Weeks. I don't know how old they are at the moment, but their NRL careers are still relatively very, very young, and I thought they really stood up and steered the Raiders really, really well, turning around that 20-point deficit and turning it into a win for them away from home. And there was, a few, especially KO Weeks, the second last try the Raiders scored, he put like a chip kick in. Mm-hmm. He identified that nobody was at the back and Kotrick scored off it. It was just the vision of the both of them and their confidence to back themselves. I thought it was really impressive for two young kids that are in a side that's lacking a bit of leadership in the spine. Giving it to them for this week.
They found Turbo out a couple of times with their kicking games for tries that weekend, much to the chagrin of our co-panelist Daniel Friend in the group chat. But Friend is not here tonight. Chris Waring is, though. G'day, Chris. Who is your player of the week?
G'day, Bo. Kieran. I've done a similar thing. I've split between two players in the one game. So it was, I've gone James Tedesco as one of the players. Very great performance against the Broncos. Just having a good season overall, a bit of a bounce back season for him. It was very impressive against one of the other competition heavyweights in the Broncos. And then the second one I've got, which will probably align to some of our talking points a little bit later on, you could also say it's a bounce back season for him as well. I've gone Angus Crichton in the same game as well, who is having another great year after, you know, a bit of a down season and also a bit of, career impacting stuff off field and whatnot. And he's been very impressive this year. So I've gone both of them.
Yeah, the Roosters had a bunch of players you could go with. And those two were very, very probably dead set at the top. My player of the round was also from the Raiders-Seagulls game, but not one of the two that Kieran picked. I went with Elliot Whitehead, who was playing, I believe, his first full game of the year. And they were down 20-0, as Kieran said. Then he pops a random intercept of a Jake Trbojevic pass and then a flick pass to KO Weeks to score that first try. Then Whitehead barged over for two of his own, leading them to an unlikely victory from that deficit against players like DCE and Turbo and, of course, Luke Brooks after losing 40-0 the previous week. So I thought Elliot Whitehead was my player of the week. Now, he won't be eligible for State of Origin, being an English player, of course, but Origin is just around the corner and people are already starting to pick all their teams. And we are hearing that New South Wales could potentially be quite different. And we know that Queensland will be a little bit different because they've got a bunch of injuries in key positions as well as the Blues. So what I'd like to hear, and you guys can give me as many as you like, just one for your state or one from each or a couple if you like, whatever you want. But come the day that the teams are named, which unlikely selection would make you the happiest? I guess. I'll start with you, Chris. I assume you're probably going for a blue. Who would you be the happiest to see on game one's team list?
I have gone for a blue, and someone that I've been thinking about for a while, but I think he's finally had the season to, I guess, match it. Connor Watson. He's been very impressive for East, playing a litany of positions. I think he's one of our common annoyances in our group chat where we talk about rugby league is how people just don't know what the F a damn utility means in football. It doesn't mean someone who can play prop and back row. Connor Watson is a utility. You can pretty much play him in most positions, give or take probably one or two. And in this fitting, he kind of makes me think of like a bit of like a Craig Wing, except you could probably get spot minutes from Connor Watson as like a, especially nowadays with the ball playing 13 role. So he's very quick. He would have the speed to manage, you know, on the edge defense for a little bit, which is, you know, he'd let him play like 25 minutes if there was no 20 minutes, if there was no actual injury in the team. So yeah, I don't think he'll get selected, but I would hope that he's at least discussed because I think he suits the role to a T if that's what they want to go with, you know, an actual utility role where he can cover many positions. It used to be, Dylan Walker used to be more of the talking point, but he's been a little bit quiet as of late. So I think Connor Watson would be a great 14 for New South Wales.
It'd be the first time that they've picked a genuine utility. I know that Craig Wing definitely qualified as that. I'm just trying to think in recent, like Tyrone Peachy, you could call him a utility. I think he had a fair bit of utility value, but... Oh, outside of that, yeah, Connor Watson would be the first genuine utility. And honestly, if he was there last year instead of Nicho Hynes, who deserved his selection, but maybe not as, quote, utility, or Damian Cook, maybe last year goes a bit differently because he'd be defending in the centers. I feel like Connor Watson could handle that. And I guess that's part of your thinking, Chris, is that, you know, we've seen the amount of injuries and the toll it can take on teams. If the Blues are going to beat the Maroons, it's going to be through some adversity. Connor Watson's the kind of guy that, you know, if you want him to play, you probably wouldn't ask him to play fullback because you'd have other fullbacks in the team, but you need him to play center for 70 minutes. Like, that guy will not let you down.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, and that's what I think. He's not, again, I think that's the, you know, the benefit of the utility position, or rather its purpose. It's not that, like I said, especially now, like you said, nowadays you've got centers and wingers, especially for New South Wales, right? If Tom, you know, if they, let's just say they pick James Tedesco and Tom Drewovich at center, obviously if Tedesco goes down, you're going to move Tom Drewovich back there. And you're looking at players that can fit into these positions and not get totally, you know, completely embarrassed in, you know, 30, 40, 50 minutes. And I think Connor Watson fits that. Another one who, and I was thinking about New South Wales players past, Jack Bird was probably the closest we've ever had to like a more suitable, like, you know, 5'8", centre, 5'8", back row kind of value where he can play forwards and backs. But Connor Watson is a more, you know, he's a more, he can play halves, halfback, hooker. So, yeah, I'll see how to go. I think probably like a Cam McInnes is probably more likely, but... I would really like to see Connor Watson there.
Yeah, me too. Dylan Walker, actually, when he did play for New South Wales, was off the bench, and I guess they were probably using him like a utility. His utility value is far greater now than when he was picked as a utility back in the day, but that's also before we knew that he liked to beat people up for fun. So that's a whole other story. Kieran, I assume you'd probably go on with the Queenslander, but maybe a blue as well. Who would you be most pleased to see in game one?
I only literally just thought of a Queenslander now. I actually had Connor Watson in mind before, and I think largely, yeah, like as Chris or all of us say in the chat, but I think Chris is probably the biggest proponent of it, of actually picking a utility that's an out-and-out utility. It would mean you don't have to pick Reece Robson, and it would mean that Appy could – I mean, Friendy is a – talks about this a lot, that he would like Appy to play 80 minutes in Origin. So I think Connor Watson, if I was Madge McGuire, I really would be not really thinking about it too much and just going Connor Watson as the 14. But for Queensland, I couldn't really think of anyone. I guess Queensland have got a few injuries though, so I had to sort of think about it a little bit more and realize that maybe there's some sort of gap that could be plugged. But yeah, as Queensland has a stick and pick policy, usually there's not too much that I'd like to change. But I would like to see AJ Brimson in there somewhere, somehow. I don't think Valentine Holmes deserves it on form, to be honest, but he does usually show up for Queensland. But I would not be unhappy if AJ was picked ahead of either Pemiso or Valentine, to be honest. I think he probably deserves it over both. But defensively, that's probably where the worry would be. So I don't think it'll happen.
Hammer, it's probably a bit unlucky for Hammer because he's been injured. I thought his form was pretty good before that and played well for Australia and Queensland last year. You're right about Val. Val has been below his best. I hate admitting it in the group chat because it makes Jack McDonald, resident shit bloke of the chat, really, really happy. So I try to avoid agreeing with him about Val Holmes' form, but he has not been good. Are you saying that you'd rather see AJ Brimson at left center?
Maybe not rather, but I guess it's more of an annoyance with Val that, yeah, he needs to, he's a senior player in the Cowboys team and yeah, it needs a bit of a, to give himself a bit of a kick up the backside and sort of show the younger blokes that the form where, or we're, that the Cowboys are in is not good enough at the moment. But yeah, I would have no issues if Val's picked there. He's obviously a class player. I guess another outside smoky, as we like to say, is Savage. Mm. I don't think he's ready for Origin at the moment. But yeah, he's really had like a much, much improved season this season. And statistically, he's actually better defensively than Cobbo and Coates, who are probably going to get picked ahead of him on the wing.
Yeah, and obviously Murray Taulagi is out injured at the moment, but his form wasn't that great either. I like Savage as a player. He's rapid. He's so fast. And if you imagine putting your left edge together and it's Hamiso Tabuai-Fido and Xavier Savage, that is pace. Or as Tubby would say, real pace. But it's unlikely, I would say. But I wouldn't hate that. Mine, I went with some different ones. So for Queensland, I don't know if he counts as, I think he counts as unlikely because I think there's a few ahead of him in the pecking order that are fit at the moment with that pick and stick mentality you talk about. David Fifita will almost certainly play on the left edge. And I would say Jeremiah Nane is probably on the right edge. And then if they were going to go for a backup edge back rower, I think they've got Jaden Sewer in mind, probably. So I would love to see Bo Fermor in there. I really, really rate Bo Fermor. I think he's an excellent, excellent back rower. I think he's more reliable than a David Fifita or a Jeremiah Nane. So from an Origin point of view, I would love to see that. For New South Wales, I can see a fair bit of flux in their front rowers. We've been talking about this in the group chat. Their front rowers there could be some movement. I would love to see a guy like Tommy Hazelton, try-scoring freak from the Sharks. He's, you know, like, if he got selected, it would be very surprising, very surprising. But the kind of thing that would put a smile on my face because they, I don't know, they're picking on form and the guy seems like he works really hard. He's got good footwork. He scores tries. There's a reason for that. Another front rower I'd be looking at as an unlikely, but one that I would be really happy about would be Taniela Paseka for the Sea Eagles. I think he's been strong for about 18 months now, particularly the first nine or so rounds this year. So I'd be looking at that. If I can pick your brain about that, Chris, those front rowers, would that work for you?
Yeah, you are right. Because I was, even as you were saying that, I was thinking of other ones I'd probably have in New South Wales as well. And you are right. I think it's going to be, there's a lot to choose from that are all on probably about like an equal, I guess, like footing in terms of like their selection prospects. Paseka is quietly underrated. I think he's such a massive human and quick and hard to stop for his size. The two I was thinking of as well to add to those names that I think are probably maybe similar-ish chance, Mitch Barnett.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be close. I wouldn't mind seeing him, a little bit of a aggro, if you will. And the second one, I think it will be pretty close because he's having a very good year and it's probably up there with probably underrated signings so far. Josh Curran, I think Josh Curran will be close as well. And I think with these all these forwards, I think they're probably like, and you got Stefano at the Tigers, and you know, a bit of a changing guard. Saipides aren't having the best season. Blah blah blah. There's lots of props in kind of like close-ish proximity, I guess, to selection. Which is, to your point, I think if where the surprises come, I think it will be in that front row. So yeah, Paseka, I'd be fine with. I'd be absolutely fine with if he got selected. Burnett, Curran, you know, there's certainly plenty to choose from.
How about the try scoring freak, Tommy Hazelton? No?
I like him, but I can't see him getting selected.
Get absolutely fucked, mate.
I think what might help with that, or I guess might determine that, is the Sharks. Upcoming games, because they've got the Storm this week, and I think it's the Panthers the week after. So seeing how he goes against, you know, Fisher Harris and Leota, and you know, the Storm team, it might be pretty deterministic in how he goes. Out of everyone with Lister, he would surprise me the most if he got selected.
Me too. Let's talk about the Sharks. That's a good segue. Thank you for that. The Sharks are sitting first, like we mentioned. Are they the real deal? As you mentioned, they're playing against Melbourne in Melbourne on Saturday night. Then they're playing against the Roosters at Suncorp for Magic Round. Then they're playing against the Panthers at PointsBet Stadium. And then to follow that, the Eels, who, you know, they could do anything out at CommBank. And then the Broncos at Suncorp. And then the Dolphins, who are top four at the moment. Then they finally get a bye in round 16. So that's a heck of a draw. Kieran, do you think the Sharks are the real deal this year?
I mean, they're going to be in the eight. And I'm of the opinion that once you get into the eight, you can do anything from there. So yes, I think that they should be taken fairly seriously. There's a very good chance now that they'll finish top four, and every single season since the NRL has started, or the NRL era rather, you've had to have a top four finish to be able to win the comp. I still don't think that they're at the same level as a Storm or a Panthers or whoever else. I think in a finals intensity game, when the I feel like the grind is more suited in a finals to a Panthers or a Storm type team, where they're just so used to wearing down the opposition and exploiting their weaknesses and just mentally stronger. Sharks, to me, still just, it's hard to accurately assess this season because I haven't really got anything to go off to say how mentally strong they really are. But I guess this weekend, starting with the Storm, will be the best start of seeing that, how strong their mental resolve is when the momentum is really against them, and they're got to defend a few back-to-back sets and see how they go with that. I do think that they're a better rounded team this season for sure. I don't think they rely as heavily on Nicho Hynes, which was probably the reason they went out in straight sets in, I think, 2022. They went out in straight sets, and then can't quite remember what happened last year with
last them, last year they were beaten in the first round of the finals.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, from the field goal. Yeah, and they should have won that game from memory as well. Although I think both teams had, multiple chances to ice it. If you ask me to say, do I think they can win the premiership, I would lean towards no, just because I think that there's stronger teams. But I think that they'll make the prelims at least. I'll make that prediction. I think they've definitely got a team good enough to go that far. But no, I will. I actually will rule them out as winning the premiership.
Interesting. One thing we have heard a lot about, you mentioned we haven't heard much out of the Sharks. We have heard plenty from our mate Chris Waring about how the Tigers dominated the Sharks at Leichhardt Oval in round three. Chris, what do you think about the Sharks? Are you on a similar train of thought to Kieran?
Well, we know that if they were to make the grand final, if the West Tigers played them, they would be roundly defeated. But of course, the West Tigers would not even get past last position. So on a serious note, I think some of the dialogue around the Sharks is, a lot of it's irrelevant until they just win finals games, which is like the last two seasons have been pretty much Groundhog Day for them. Like, they've been a very good regular season team. and then they shit the bed, for lack of a better term, in the final series. So I think it doesn't. I think what they do now doesn't matter, to be honest. They're going to be a top eight team. I'm 100% certain of that. But when it matters is going to be, can you guys win a finals game? And that's when the actual dialogue will start. If you're asking me, do I think they're a finals team based on all prior evidence, I'm going to say no, because their seasons are closely mapping their past seasons. How to go this week and next week against the Storm and the Panthers, like we said previously, would be interesting.
Mm.
But at this point in time, I'm going to say no, because they haven't proved it in finals games. So until they do that, I'm going to say no. They don't have it within them.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I mentioned in the group chat that I think the four teams that have a class differential above everybody else are the Panthers, Broncos, Storm, and the Roosters. And the Broncos are looking tentative because of Adam Reynolds' injury. They really need him to come good and well before the finals if they're going to push for that top four. So there is a top four spot there available, I think, if the Sharks are good enough to take it. And they probably are. But they just feel like Warriors or Knights last year, or the Cowboys or Sharks the year before, where it's like, yeah, they're going to be a top four team or thereabouts, but are they going to win the premiership? No. I mean, the Panthers are there. The Roosters are there. The Broncos are there. The Storm are there. So I'm with you guys. I think the Sharks will do well this year, but I don't think they are the real deal. I just saw Chris's note on the side there. The next topic is, as we know, Demetrio has been sacked since the last episode that we had. So that was pretty predictable. Wayne Bennett is the odds-on favorite to end up there. And I've found a news report by Emma Lawrence for Channel 9 that I'll play for you guys now.
Wayne Bennett was in fine form today.
Well, I'm going to be unemployed at the end of the year, Joel, so need a job.
The supercoach explaining why he's interested in a return to South Sydney.
Oh, I just like their brand. I like them. I work with them. I have a good relationship with everybody there. It's an iconic club, and I just like the vibe there.
The question I have for you boys, I'll start with you, Chris, is, is this a good move? We've seen time and time again that Wayne Bennett does really well with clubs when he's there, and then they fall off a cliff. And it didn't happen immediately with South. They did make a prelim, and then they did lead the competition for half the year last year before falling off said cliff. So I don't know if Wayne Bennett can be blamed for South's predicament right now. But is this a good move for South's? Is this a good move for Wayne Bennett? Or are we just kicking the problem down the road another few years if they sign him for a couple of years? What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, I mean, now that Shane Flanagan has a job, there's no one else to, I guess, do the bidding for on Fox ETC to take the next coaching vacancy. So it is Bennett, and it's hard to know what the coaching, I guess, landscape is like. I know that Michael Checker, the union coach, put his hand up, or was interested in it. And look, if Bennett coached South Sydney, there would be a better team, no doubt. I'm 100% sure of that. It's also true, I think Walker will be 35 or 36 next year. I know they signed that half from the UK. I think Dodds is his name. I'm pretty
Lewis
sure.
Dodds,
it looks
yeah.
Like the, yeah, it looks like the Lachlan Ilias thing is over, which is a point to Miles and a negative against the rest of us. So
yeah, I hate that.
Miles, former panelist of the show. I think Cook still has footy in him. The Mitchell one's so hard to explain. I think Mitchell would really benefit from someone like Bennett as his coach, as he did previously when he was there. So it's hard to, I'm not sure if it's the right decision in terms of, I understand it's not like a, in terms of the long term, it's probably not, but I think there is value in just improving your football team like immediately, which South Sydney need to do. They are just awful at the moment, and it's such a quick span of time as well with some pretty old players, which is the concerning part. So Bennett did a good job with the Dolphins last year. They faded away, but obviously the context of that team is he formulated a team, you know, with scraps of the NRL salary cap, and then this year they're flying. They're really competent, solid, tough team. So I'm going to say yes in terms of what's available, because I just can't see anything else. That the Burgess Morris thing seems to have gone too far. Maybe Bennett will be a decent bridging point when I try to repair the bridge with Burgess when his contract is eventually over. You know, Bennett is old, and that's safety obvious. It's you don't know how much longer he can be doing the travel and, you know, the routine of you know, professional sport and professional coaching. So maybe it is. Maybe if it's like another stopgap for Bennett, like if it's like 2 years, 3 years, sure. Right. But it's mostly because I don't know what else they should do. And considering how fast the decline was, like, I think it's good to get, you know, pretty much the most experienced hand you could ever get in there.
Do you think, Kieran, that like obviously he'll stay out the season for the Dolphins at the very least, you would assume, and Ben Hornby would remain as the interim coach at South Sydney. But say, for example, if they signed Wayne Bennett this week to start next year, even that could be a shot in the arm for the Rabbitohs. You know, that could be like a little bit of a confidence boost. It might get them, you know, off the bottom of the ladder and put the Tigers there or something. So, Kieran, what do you... Sorry, Chris.
Cheers.
Kieran, do you think it's a good move for Wayne to move to South? And do you think it's good for South?
I mean, it's definitely a good move for Wayne. I guess at this point of his career with what he's achieved, there isn't exactly a bad move for him. I guess he's more... I don't know. That's the kind of the concern I have. Like, is this a move for Wayne more for him, or is this a move for... Not that I'm questioning his integrity, but yeah, as you said, Rabbitohs don't want to be kicking their sort of future development another few years down the road with once if Wayne leaves, will he leave the Rabbitohs as he has left the Rabbitohs and many other clubs in the state that they've been left in before, which is something I haven't read into too much and I've disagreed with people before, but you do look at it and sort of think, like, I don't know, the way that Adam Reynolds was, his contract was handled when Wayne was still at the Rabbitohs. Obviously, that was that's just one player, and these things do happen. But I think that was quite obviously the wrong player to let go. Your club captain controls the game, steers the team around the park for players like Cody and Latrell and Cook, who. I don't know. I thought you could already see signs that Cook was slowing down. Cody's not exactly the leader type, and Latrell had disciplinary and injury issues. For me, it was a bit of a strange one to choose Reynolds out of the three to be let go. Do I think Wayne could do well with the Rabbitohs? Yes, 100%. I have like almost no doubt that they'd be back in the finals next season if he signs there, and it seems like that's going to happen. Yeah, he's just, yeah. In my eyes, at least the second best manager that has been in the game since I've been watching. So yeah, I think it's a good thing for both parties, Wayne and the Rabbitohs.
No question, he's one of the greats. Let's talk very quickly about the atrocious refereeing that we saw on the weekend, and what we're not going to do, boys. But just as a disclaimer to the audience as well. I've been watching a little bit of NRL 360. I've been curious about James Graham instead of Paul Kent. And I think they've tried to address the whole gender thing as fairly and balanced as they can, but it just doesn't sound good coming from a bunch of blokes talking about how a woman needs to get dropped, or a woman needs to do this, or the game needs to do this about women or whatever. So we're a bunch of blokes. We're not going to touch that. What we are going to touch, though, is the fact that, and not just Casey Badger in that Tigers Bulldogs game, which did descend into farce, but there was also, she wasn't helped out by the bunker. She wasn't helped out by her touch judges. And the bunker made an atrocious call in the, I think, the Rabbitohs and Penrith game. I don't think Isaac Thompson scored that try. I don't think Philip Sami scored that try for the Titans against the Storm. I think Caesar should have been in the sin bin, at least, judging by previous instances of hip drops. I think Dallin Boteni-Zalesniak should have probably had a penalty try, or at least Greg Marzu in the sin bin for a professional foul for tackling him in the air. So there was a number of instances across the game. And that debate about do we need the bunker has reared its ugly head. Chris, what do you think? Obviously, there was a lot of frustration and the Tigers were on the end of it the other day. But do you feel like the refereeing is getting worse? Do you feel like there's a standard that is just not being met? Because it feels like things are getting worse to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think things are getting worse. And I guess it's hard to pinpoint, like, why. Why is it getting worse?
Mm.
And some of it, yeah, like the Marzu one was, I don't understand the thought making there. The Philip Sami one was incredible. There were 5 successful captain challenges in the Bulldogs-Tigers game, which is just astounding.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the Caesar, yeah. So it's just, and people tend to go to, well, just, you know, just get rid of the bunker. That's not the answer at all. Because I can just imagine the comments for, like, just like the most obvious knock on in the world that's missed by the bunker, like, because the bunker's not there, right?
Yeah.
And this is a point that James Graham was talking about on 360. I can't remember what day, but it's a good point, right? It's, you don't want to be reactionary to this type of stuff, right? It's not, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater because there's been a pattern now of just bad decisions, but there needs to be, like, corrections and I don't know what it needs to be, but, like, it's hard to say other than just better training, because, like, people, refereeing, like, if live decisions, you're going to get decisions wrong, right? That's mm-hmm. what the bunker's there for, right? But people in, there's no excuse at all for people in the bunker to be getting decisions so horrifically wrong. Like, there is zero excuse for it, and I mean zero. For things like when there is so much, like, and again, fans aren't always the best indicator, because sometimes fans don't know what the fuck they're talking about, but
mm-hmm.
generally, sentiment, people understand the rules, right? And it's just, sometimes there are decisions that are so contrast, that are made, that are so contrasting with what the general consensus should be, is that it's as astounding. So just as a biased one, like, it was actually incredible. I don't, like, the Caesar one, that, like, for example, I think Gavin's hip drop was worse than Caesar's.
Early in the season.
Like, yeah.
Yep.
But, like, he should have went to the bin. If anything's consistent, he should have went to the sin bin, right? And that was really, in my opinion, the only decision that the Tigers got in their favour. And I do think, not to be conspiracy minded, I do think, like, even-ups happen. I don't know if they're conscious. I think they're probably subconscious. But I think officials do try to get an even-up, you know, at points in the game. Maybe that was mm-hmm. one of them. The way Caesar played, though, maybe he probably would have been better off playing with 12. But... And I just, it's incredibly frustrating. It's a professional sport, and the game's turned into a farce. Like, the Bulldogs Tigers game was a complete farce. That was a complete joke. That just descended into mayhem towards the end. And, like, I'm going to be honest, I don't know what the solution is, but they're just, like, people in the bunker cannot be getting, like, interpretative decisions so horrifically wrong. Like, if you ask most fans, let's say the Marzu one, right, I'd say, what, 80% would have had the correct decision there, like either the sin bin or the penalty try.
Yeah.
And it's just like maybe that's even being, maybe more than 80, right? But most fans would know what decision would be made there. And it's just, it makes watching the game frustrating. Of course, there is, sometimes fans are over the top, but they're, in, it's been noticed for the last couple of weeks, like, the standard of officiating is horrific, and there is definitely, without a doubt, a bias, probably unconscious bias, against quote unquote bad teams do things wrong. So when these 50-50s come up, it usually always goes to a better team. Yeah, but, like, that I think that should be a part of officiating. It's like some unconscious bias training. I don't know if it exists or not, but yeah, they're just, I don't know. Again, it's hard to tell what the answer is. Just be better.
Unfortunately, when you have, say, for example, if the unconscious bias is pointed out to somebody, they probably are then tending to overcorrect, and then you end up in a situation where the shit teams get more good calls, which probably actually makes a more even game and maybe a better game. But I don't know. I don't think there can be such a thing as correcting an unconscious bias, because that's the whole point. It's unconscious. You make yourself aware of it, then then you do want to correct it, right? It's like the whole square up thing you talked about, you know, like, oh, fuck, I fucked that up. I now realize I fucked that up. I'm now aware of it. And now you want to help them out. Yeah, so I don't know. That's a really tricky one. I'm kind of with you on that. Kieran, any other thoughts regarding the bunker ref situation?
I mean, the bunker has to stay. Like, it's quite obvious. I think just for instance, with the Dallin Wojtyla Zelezniak try, that I don't know what the score was at the time, but obviously the Warriors lost by 6. If that try gets awarded as it, I can't see how that the bunker stuffs that up, but at least keep the bunker so that. Because that's quite a difficult decision for a referee to make on the fly. Mm-hmm. Although if they're correctly positioned, I feel like you could. But I think benefit of having the bunker there to just at least have a look. They stuffed it up for the Warriors, but I would hate to see the bunker get gotten rid of just because of, I don't know, like because people don't like it and they think it slows the game down. I think that it benefits in situations like that. But yeah, outside of that, I don't have too much more to add other than that, yeah, the refereeing standard has quite noticeably dropped this season, I think, it's 100% true. Billy Slater said it on his podcast, like, you go out and be a referee, I have no doubt it would be. And I've actually been a referee for under-8s kids, and, yeah, even I was quite scared of making mistakes in that, and I'm sure I did. But, yeah, I mean, I don't envy the referees either, but the standard definitely needs to be better.
Yeah, I don't want to climb into the chair at indoor cricket. You know, I haven't volunteered to referee at touch footy. And the reason for that is, yeah, it does look fucking stressful. I don't want to be part of that. Respect to referees. And like James Graham did say on NRL 360, which Chris, you're kind of referencing, is that bad players play games players play bad games all the time, but they're not necessarily dropped straight away. There's got to be, you know, sometimes they need the cuddle, sometimes they need this, sometimes they need support, you know, sometimes they need some extra training or some focus on a particular area or something like that. I think we do need to be kind, and obviously the level of abuse that has been leveled towards some of the officials this week, some of it based on gender, is not acceptable, and that's something that we certainly don't co-sign here. Let's move forward to another definite feminist, the Big E.
Hello, boys. This is the Big E. I am going to do my Big E Binolo tip of the week for today. The first match, I am going to tip the Dolphins against Manly Seagulls. Sorry, Stedman. I don't want to let my boy hammer down. Report. And yeah, okay. Sorry, buddy. I'm not going to tip your team. I know. I'm going to tip the Panthers, tipping the Broncos, and YouTube boys have put me in a difficult situation right here, of course. Sorry, Raymond, I'm actually not going to tip your team. I'm actually going to tip the Fendi's team, the Raymond and Fendi's Cup, the finals, the Big E, report. And also going to tip Dragons, going to tip Storms, tipping the Cowboys. And yes, I am going to tip the Cowboys. And of course, quick heads up, after I get through this, I am also going to say, between me and my brother, we are going down to the Gold Coast to watch my team against the Titans, Cowboys against the Titans. That is my Big E Binomaly tip of the week. And I think for my role card, I am going to say, congratulations to the Roosters to win 42-18. Not bad. That's good. And for my wild card, I am actually going to say Reece Walsh will get maybe 3 or 4 tries for Reece Walsh. That is my book prediction. And I hope I might get it right. That is the Big E. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, knock, knock, who's there? Big E, Big E who? Big E out. Report.
Thank you to the Big E, Owen Gibson, for his phenomenal tips of round 10. It's always a burst of energy into our podcast when the Big E starts telling knock, knock jokes. Kieran, he mentioned that you guys will be heading down to the Gold Coast on Sunday afternoon after a Mother's Day breakfast, of course. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. Will that be your match of the round, or do you have something else in mind?
That will definitely not be my match of the round. Wasn't my match of the round last season when we went down to it either. Cowboys lost, and that I think that ended our finals chances pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Not massively confident this weekend either, but alas, my game of the round is Storm versus Sharks. I've gone probably the more obvious pick. If I'm honest, I'm quite looking forward to every Saturday game. I think that they'll all be close and good clashes. I actually think most games this round will be fairly close, except for maybe that Panthers Bulldogs one. But yeah, I'm gonna say Storm and Sharks as the best game this round, and I'm really, really keen to see how good the Sharks are.
Chris, the Big E has dubbed it the Wearing Friend Cup, and he has not backed in your boys. I assume that's also not your game of the round. You might be predictable like me and Kieran and gone for the Storm Sharks game, in fact.
Yeah, it's not that elusive game between the competition heavyweights and the Tigers and Knights in the elusive Saturday 3 p.m. spot. That is not my game of the round.
At Scully Park in Tamworth.
yeah, just at whoop of all places. I'm also surprised Kieran got tickets to the Gold Coast game. I thought it would have been sold out by this time of the week, but should be exciting. Should be an absolute atmosphere like Carnival at Seaver Stadium. That's a travel reference for Miles Stedman if he ever listens to the podcast.
He's on the plane ride back from Ecuador at the moment, actually. Big M.
Actually in live. Yeah, the Big M. My game of the round is that it's not the Sharks Storm game. I'm going the Roosters Warriors. I think this is a massive game for the Warriors season. I'm going to be honest, I'm not completely surprised how the Warriors season is going. I'm a little bit surprised. I didn't think they'd lose this many, but I think they were definitely going to have a back to earth moment, but they've lost quite a few on the trot now. I think they're 15th or 14th, so 14th, they're not traveling too well. I think this is a massive game. Yeah, I think this is a massive game for their season, and the Roosters are doing quite well. Had a nice win last week, so yeah, I've got that penciled in as my game of the round.
I love it. All right, Kieran, what are your tips for round 10?
I have gone Manly to beat the Dolphins at Suncorp Stadium tomorrow night. So in our backyard tomorrow night in Brisbane by 6. That's the margin game on ESPN Footy Tips. I think the Panthers will beat the Bulldogs. I did say that I think the Panthers will comfortably cover for the Bulldogs, but I could see it maybe being close until halftime and then the Panthers pulling away. I've gone the Broncos just off the back of the inexperienced look of the Parramatta side, and I don't know, they just look like they kind of remind me of the Cowboys. They look like they lack so much punch and like they're not really enjoying their footy. So I've gone the Broncos, who, to be honest, haven't really convinced me much more either, but I'll back them just with a bit more star power. I have gone the Knights to beat the Tigers, but I'm very curious to see this. Seems like two sides that are pretty keen to really dig in for each other and fight for the entire 80 minutes. Maybe not the most skilled teams in the NRL, but what they lack there, they definitely don't lack in attitude and what they can control. So yeah, I guess that's why I'm looking forward to that game. Dragons, Rabbitohs. I've actually gone the Rabbitohs. I think the Rabbitohs, this could be the game where they kind of start to show something that they haven't shown all season yet. They haven't really shown us a single performance where I've gone, okay, this is why I tipped them to win the minor premiership, and maybe I think I may have tipped them to win the major premiership. I don't think that can happen anymore, but Latrell's back at fullback. Shibasaki, Cowboys legend on the wing. That's for the season. I don't know how that works, but he's been signed, because he's with the Blackhawks and that's the Rabbitohs feeder club, he's allowed to play for them for the season. It's not exactly a loan. I don't exactly understand how it works, but
the Blackhawks aren't affiliated with the Cowboys anymore, so he's in their system.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm having a hard time sticking with my tip with the Rabbitohs, just looking through this, but I'll stick with the Rabbitohs anyway. I've gone the Storm to beat the Sharks. I think Noah Papenhuyzen or Jerome Hughes, but I just think the Storm just looks so impressive this season. I probably have them in the grand final at the moment. Definitely if I had to pick right now, I would say Melbourne Storm. And then, yeah, I've gone the Roosters to beat the Warriors. But as Chris was touching on, if the Warriors lose this game, they are like, they could be, I think, maybe three or four, maybe even four wins outside the top eight, getting close to the halfway mark. And I don't know what the Warriors' second half of the season, their fixtures look like. But yeah, it's a, as Chris said, a very, very big game for the Warriors. So they'd want to be up for it. The same goes for my Cowboys in the All Queensland Derby against the Titans on the Gold Coast. I've tipped the Titans. The Cowboys look like, especially even last week against the Dolphins, we started so fast. Looks great, but there hasn't been, except for maybe against the Dolphins, where it looks like we were really enjoying our footy. Every other game where we've had a small 5-10 minute period where we've looked awesome, it's never filled me with any confidence. It just looks like once that sort of fun period where we're on top is over, we're just going to be flat and out of ideas, and our attitude will drop and we'll kind of have our heads down. And yeah, I think the Titans have a bit more fight in them, and the form AJ's in, I like the Titans at home.
Thank you for that. I loved the semi Ned Flanders parents reference there, where it's like, they tried nothing and they're all out of ideas. Chris, who are your tips for round 10?
Yeah, I found this week a little bit difficult to tip for some of these games. So I've gone the Dolphins tomorrow night to beat the Manly Seagulls. Seagulls are inconsistent as hell. On the Friday night, I think this will be a close game, but I think the Penrith will win. I think a bit of class in the halves will get them there. Friday night game, Eels and Broncos. I'm going to Broncos. Parramatta just not unreliable. They are a two-man team and they don't have any of their two players. So there's that. Christ almighty. I'm going to go to the Knights. Jaden Sullivan is back. Well said. I actually think, yeah, I don't know. We lost five in a row now. I did declare that we're back at the when was like Parramatta at Combank Stadium to my friends, and yeah, we haven't won a game since then. It's been 5 weeks. Cheers, boys. The Saturday game, yeah, I found this hard as well. I did want to touch on the Tigers game. So I'm assuming Benji Marshall has done this. He's moved Isaiah Papali'i back into 13.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm assuming he's done this because last week he's probably feeling pretty fresh because he took four runs for 26 meters. So, get in the middle, Isaiah Papali'i, quickly becoming one of the worst signings.
And that might be a strategy just to be like, mate, like I need 15 runs from you and 30 tackles. Like, this is your job now. Maybe it's that.
Maybe it is, yeah. And get Bateman back on the edge and keep Finu at 11, which is good. Hopefully Alex Saifov doesn't headbutt anyone this week. or maybe hopefully he does so he gets dropped. Dragons, Rabbitohs. Now, I find this was like the Rabbitohs are just going to win at some point. They just are. And it's so hard to pick when that is. And I was going to tip the Rabbitohs, but then I've had a look at the team and I still like the Dragons 17 more. I just think they've got a way better forward pack than the Rabbitohs, and the Rabbitohs are playing a new halfback. So I just think with that, with the forward pack and Ben Hunt versus the debutant, I'm just going to go to Dragons. I'm going to go to Storm over the Sharks just because my bias is against the Sharks beating a top team. This may, if they win, I may reconsider that. I know Papenhuyzen's out. Have a happy retirement, Ryan Papenhuyzen, and the Sharks. So I'm going to go to Storm. Like I said before, I'm looking forward to this game a lot. I'm going to go the Roosters. But I think it'll be really grueling. I think it'll be a tight contest. But I'm going to go the Roosters just. And the last game. Now, I think I've tipped one Cowboys game correctly all year, and I'm not kidding. So I'm going to tip the Titans because I think they've played the better football in like the last month.
Mm-hmm.
I know they've only won one game, but if you've been watching Titans games, and I know no one at Seabus has, but I have been at home, they're not a bad team. Like if you actually watch them, they're a team not worthy of 17th. They're a better team than that. And yes, it took them a few weeks, but the last month they've been unlucky. I think they got an extremely rough decision last week with the strip. So I just think they've been a better team. So I want to tip the Titans.
Welcome to the fight. You have awoken. Thank you for joining me. I will go for the Sea Eagles for the exact reason that you didn't go for them, Chris, because they are inconsistent. I've got a feeling they're just going to turn up against the Dolphins. So I'm going to go for that one. We got the Paul Alamotti Derby, the Panthers and Bulldogs. I'm going to go for the Panthers. The Eels and Broncos. Now, I do want to mention, this is the Shane Kelly Derby back in the day. Brendan Piacora is another guy that I would love to see in State of Origin for Queensland on an edge. I think he's a gun. I think if injuries strike and he gets thrown in there, like, look out. I think he'll be a weapon. So I'm going to go for the Broncos on that one, but I just thought I'd quickly mention Brendan Piacora there. In the Wearing Friend Cup, as we've mentioned, I am going to go for the Knights. The Jaden Sullivan of it all is very, very unfortunate. Dragons, Rabbitohs, isn't that something? I'll go the Rabbitohs. Yeah, fuck it. Next game, I will go the Storm as well. I'm worried about Jerome Hughes also being out though. I'm going to go the Sharks. I'll change that one. Roosters and Warriors, I will go for the Roosters in that one. And I invite everyone to look at their 17-man team that they've named and find a weakness. Like Brandon Smith at dummy half is probably their weakest player. Like that's nuts. That's just silly. So, they're a great team. And I will go for the Cowboys against the Titans in the Sam McIntyre Derby. So that's my tips this week. Boys, thank you very much for your company this episode. I've very much enjoyed it. But before we go, we have to do our bold predictions. So, Chris, what's a bold prediction for round 10?
So I think the Sunday games, the Roosters-Warriors game will be decided by less than 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
I did just have a look at the Roosters 17 again, and you aren't wrong. It's something. And then the Titans Cowboys game, I think it's going to be a bit of a shootout. So I think it's going to be over 44 points combined. So I think it'll be like a 20 versus 20 something game with a Titans win.
All right. So we've got a less than 6 margin in the Roosters game and an over 44 points, did you say?
Yeah, 44 points combined.
All right. Over 44 for the Titans and Cowboys. All right. Thank you very much. Kieran, thank you for your company as well. What's your bold prediction for this week?
I've just got at least 4 games to be decided by 6 points or less.
Ah, 4 tight ones. I do like that very much. That bodes well for a good weekend of footy. I'm going to be like the Big E. Remember, the Big E tipped Reece Walsh for 3 or 4 tries against the Eels, and that could be on. I'm gonna tip between Brendan Piacora, Jordan Rickey, and Xavier Willison, there'll be 2 tries between those 3 players. I've got a feeling that Reece Walsh will be a focal point of attack on those edges, and Willison will probably spend a little bit of time on the edges as well, or you know, around that area. So I think Piacora, Rickey, and Willison will combine for 2 tries between them. As I said, boys, thank you very much. Thank you to the Big E for his contribution. Unluckily, we couldn't have Friendy here, who is stuck at work, and Miles is hopefully above the Pacific Ocean and not in it as we speak. But, well, I say that tentatively. But, boys, thank you very much. And thank you to the audience, of course, for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe and tell a friend about us if they like their rugby league so they can go above the horizontal next week as well. But until then. Above the Horizontal is a rugby league podcast by the fans and for the fans. It's produced by our entire team of former writers for Real Sport, including Daniel Friend, Christopher Waring, Miles Steppen, Kieran Gibson, and me, Bo Nicholson. We'd love it if you could support us by telling a rugby league fan about us so they can go above the horizontal as well. Thanks for listening. See you next time.